Welcome to the Human Experience Podcast with Carl Sokia.
Aloha! And welcome to another episode of the Human Experience Podcast featuring Carl Sokia. I'm very excited today to be able to bring a special guest into the studio to talk about a great topic that is near and dear to my heart, and that's diversity. And when I talk about diversity, I'm not only speaking about maybe ethnic diversity or cultural diversity, but also just diversity in thought. One of my goals on the Human Experience Podcast is to be able to give you a little bit of insight into the minds and the experiences of human beings where you might not have been able to have those same experiences in your life, just to help you be able to see the differences that we have and be able to embrace that diversity in thinking and understand humans at a much deeper level than we currently do. So I'm very excited to have this guest in. He's a former University of Utah football player. Also, he is currently a certified coach and trainer with Athletic and Fit. You can look him up on athleticaf.com and read more about his work there. I don't think you're going to find a nicer gentleman anywhere on the face of the planet. Absolutely love this guy. And I'm very excited to have him on to talk a little bit about his journey. He was born and raised in the Crenshaw District of South Central Los Angeles and came here to Salt Lake City, Utah to play college football at the University of Utah. And so I'm really excited to talk about his experience, his journey from the Crenshaw District and what it was like growing up there and then being able to come over to Salt Lake City, Utah and kind of how that whole experience worked. Because from my understanding and my feeling, those are two totally different worlds. And I'm really excited to really get a glimpse into what life would look like in Utah through his eyes. So I want to welcome to the show, Tangeray Tango Towns. Tango, you are such a stud. Thank you so much for being here. I absolutely love you, and I'm grateful that you chose to come onto the podcast. So welcome.
Thank you, man. I'm humbled, man. I really want to tell you, I really appreciate the introduction. I mean, I'm really humbled, bro, to be on the show, and you're just as great as a man as you believe I am.
Oh, you're the man, Tango. That. Well, good. Well, so why don't you kick us off by telling everybody a little bit about yourself, maybe about your background, your upbringing, and what brought you here to Salt Lake City, Utah, where you're at now?
Sure. So, I'm from South Central Los Angeles. I grew up in the Crenshaw District, you know, shout out my hometown, right on Fifth Avenue in Florence. And so, basically, I grew up in a single-parent household. My dad and my mom both, were young when they had me. Right. My mom was probably 15 when she had me. My dad was probably about 20, you know what I'm saying? And my dad was a hustler. My mom was a hustler. They both were, you know, hustlers, you know what I'm saying? And that's just because of the environment. My grandma and my mom and my great-grandmother, Elaine, rest in peace. Her birthday was just a couple of days ago. She, they all moved from D.C. They all from back east.
Okay.
And so when they came back from D.C., you know, they came to L.A., to South Central, and they've been a part of the community ever since. You know, me and my little sister, I got two younger sisters, one named Deborah and the other one named Aaliyah Towns. You know, I love them both dearly.
Absolutely.
And my pride and joy, you know, I'm
awesome.
Very proud of my family. But anyway, you know, we came from a pretty tough upbringing. I mean, I ain't going to say it was the worst of the worst because it made me the man I am today, and I'm grateful for that. And, you know, it wasn't easy as far as, the environment because we were surrounded by an environment that was full of destruction, you know, self-destruction at that. And so what I mean by that, everywhere you look around you, you know what I'm saying, there was something going on as far as whether it be drugs or murder or gang violence, whatever had you, you know what I'm saying? And my mom and my dad was, being that they was hustlers, they was heavily invested in that. My dad is a Crip, you know what I'm saying? He from West Boulevard. Mm-hmm. That's what I ended up growing up being from, you know what I'm saying? Ended up following his footsteps.
Right.
I've been on my own since I was about 14 years old. You know, I left my mom's house because my mom she's probably the strongest person I know, you know, to keep it real 1,000. So before I, you know, get in detail about who my mom is, I just want to make sure I put that out there. My mom is one of the toughest individuals I know, one of the best hustlers I ever met in my life, you know what I'm saying? She's the reason I got a lot of the drive and the motivation that I have. You know, she's the one who taught me how to work ethic that I have. That's why it's nothing for me to wake up at 4 a.m. and be at the gym, doing my thing. And we'll get into that in a second. But as far as my upbringing goes, my mom did everything she could, man, to make sure we had the best life. You know what I'm saying? My mom was a hustler, but you know, at the age of 14, we just didn't see eye to eye, you know. So I left and went and lived with my auntie Chris on Fifth Avenue in Florence. My cousin Nick and my cousin Aaliyah bossed up me and T. I'm shouting them out. You know, if y'all interested, y'all should check their music out, by the way.
Yeah, we'll give them a shout. Absolutely.
Yeah, I grew up on Fifth Avenue in Florence, you know, right in the front hood 60s. That's where Nipsey from. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's the Crenshaw District. And so, you know, I grew up around that environment. You know, I grew up in that environment, invested in that environment. I mean, by the time I was 15, you know, I had my own car and everything. I was doing my own thing. Like, I got kicked out of Westchester High School. You know, I couldn't really check into any other school. They gave me an OT, which was an opportunity to transfer. And so they gave me a list of schools to choose from to go to, which was probably the best decision of my life because I ended up going to Pacific Palisades. And that was like this rich charter school out in Malibu. It's a pretty dope school. I met a lot of cool people there, made a lot of really, really genuine relationships, you know, and showed me a lot too, being a kid from South Central, because my grandma used to always tell me, don't be afraid to live past Wilshire.
Sure.
And you know, what that meant was just like, don't be afraid to live outside of that box, man. Like, you know, I always believed that I deserve better, you know, in life. And I never believed I was a victim of my circumstance, you know, because I believe you're supposed to take accountability for any and every action you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Do, you know, whether it's consciously or subconsciously. And, you know, the reason I say that and the reason I was telling you earlier, there ain't no such thing as luck, at least in my eyes. It's no such thing as consequence. Everything happens for a reason, you know. Right. You put in a situation to see how you're going to handle that. And depending on how you handle that is what's really going to be a good judge of what your true character is, I believe. And so I say that to say, like, you know, I was out on the streets at 14 years old. You know, I was a hustler. You know, I did my thing, but I stayed in school. I was an honor student throughout high school.
Fantastic.
Honor student throughout middle school. You know, I went to Overwright Middle School. Yeah. Was an honor student. You know, I was just always in trouble because I was a little firecracker, man. Like, I was mad at the world for no reason because I didn't understand anything, you know. I'm just saying that to say, like, as I matured and grew, you know, I always knew, like, I didn't want to be, you know, a victim of my circumstance.
Right.
You know what I mean? I always knew I didn't want to be a victim of my circumstance. And so, you know, my dad, I got to give him a lot of respect because my dad showed me how to be a man. You know, he showed me how to hustle. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was one of the reasons, like, I'm alive, man. Like, you know, most people wouldn't see me in my father's relationship and think that we had a good relationship because it's not really, to most people, it wouldn't be a father-son more so relationship. It's more so a friend, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, to me, like, that's probably one of the most important relationships in my life outside of my mother and my grandmother, at least, and my, you know, and my family, I should say.
Right.
But the reason I say that is because, like, most people look at my parents and think that they was probably terrible parents, but that ain't true. Like, I feel like they was the best parents for me. You know, my dad was a real live hustler, and I don't really want to get into detail about
that. Sure, of course.
But, like, you know, he really did his stuff, you know what I mean? And what I mean by that is, like, he was known for getting money and doing his thing. And one thing I tell you, I tell my mom and them all the time, I learned from their mistakes, you know what I'm saying? That's why I'm where I'm at. And so I'm very grateful to have had them be the influence that they had in my life, because, like, they showed me a lot of what I didn't want, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And it wasn't, that ain't to take no credit from them. Like, that's to give them the utmost respect, because I say, like, that helped me get through college.
Right. And, you know, you bring up a great point. And I think a lot of that is our parents. They do what they have to do so that we can have what we have. And I think no matter where you are, I think you have to have respect for that. Because I, you know, I look at my family and I think it's the same way. You know, look at all the struggle my parents went through. And they're trying to build a foundation that we can stand upon so that we can have it better than they did.
Right.
Exactly. By any means necessary, really. Right.
Exactly.
And I think, so I respect a lot of that. And I definitely understand where you're coming from. So talk me through a little bit of, you know, what it was like. I think there's a lot of people that might have maybe misperceptions, maybe about what it is to grow up in South Central LA. There was a lot of destruction throughout South Central, gosh, in the early, I mean, the, what, 1960s, 1970s, all through 1980s, all the way through. And so a lot of people, that's the canvas they paint South Central in, right?
Yeah.
They watch TV shows or movies like Boys in the Hood or whatever it may be. And that's the glimpse they have into South Central. But I know there's so much more to South Central than that. So tell us a little bit about what it was like for you and what you were able to see through your viewpoint of growing up as a kid, you know, through South Central and then, you know, come all the way up into your time coming to Utah.
Yeah, man. Outside of all of, like, the destruction, man, it was most definitely a beautiful place to grow up. The reason I say that is because, I mean, some of the people that's in that environment, a lot of people give them the wrong, like you said, they got the wrong perception of it. Like, yeah, they get a glimpse of what it's like for a black man in America, I feel like, when they watch those movies like Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society. I mean, yeah, those things take place in LA, but, like, in any major, you know what I'm saying, city, that's how it is. You go to Detroit, you know what I mean? You go to St. Louis or, you know, Chicago, somewhere like that.
Baltimore, like, I mean, all
over.
Same
thing, yeah, Baltimore. So, like, what I mean by that is, it's like, in all reality, the reason that it's a misconception is because I don't think people really want to realize, like, what it means to be a black man in America. And the reason I say that is not because I think I'm any better than anybody by any means or anything of the sorts. It's just more so like at an early age, I had to realize, like, since the days I can remember, like at an early age, I was taught, like, you know, you got to be aware of the color of your skin. And so although that was something that I had to deal with growing up, like, you know, the environment outside of all the other stuff, like, was actually pretty cool. Like, I had a really good childhood, man, like, outside of the hard times. Like, right. The reason I say that is because the hard times actually made me, man. Like, yep. And I'm grateful for that. Like, I think back on moments where I was just outside being a kid playing, you know, and I was just telling some of my kids, because, you know, I coach kids nowadays, and it's like watching these kids play these video games all day long. Like, it's kind of crazy to me because, like, I used to beg my mom to go outside, you know, like right. We used to beg to be outside to go play with our homies, you know, just to go be kids, you know.
Yep.
And so, like, to any kid that I ever have any type of impact on, I try to make sure I influence them to understand, like, man, be a kid as long as you can. You
right.
know what I'm saying? Because, like, those moments are precious. Like,
absolutely.
I didn't get those moments for a long time, you know. Now that I look back at it, I'm like, dang, you know, 14 years old, like, yeah. That's... you know, pretty young, man. And
right.
I didn't know what I was doing. And so all I'm saying is, it's like, one thing I will tell you is that environment kept me determined to be better.
I bet.
It made me want to get out of there. It made me want to come. Because, like, my whole goal in this life, man, is not just to impact my environment, but to impact the world in a better way. You know, I try to be my best self every day. That's why when I'm in that gym, you know, with my people in that gym, you know what I'm saying? I give them my all because I want to give my best self to the world, because I believe if I give a little bit of myself, you know, not a little bit, but if I give my all to, you know, people, my best self, then that's going to trickle down. It's going to be a trickle down effect. They'll take that outside of the gym, take that into the world. And that's just, you know, how the impact and influence would be.
Right.
And so, I mean, back to what you were saying, as far as like coming from LA and growing up in the environment, the reason I say that is because I met a lot of people, man. Like, for example, my godfather, man, like, he's a white man, you know, mm-hmm. He's a Jewish white man, you know.
Right.
He met my mom or whatever, because, you know, my mom was a hustler, you know what I'm saying? And they was cool or whatever, but like, he's my godfather, you know what I'm saying? And
right.
He really helped save my life because he was the one who put me in football.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He put me in football at 9 years old. I played for the Santa Monica Vikings. And I have made a lot of great relationships, got to see a lot of different things at an early age as far as, like, the skin color narrative and, you know, what it's like being in South Central and
yeah.
Santa Monica and living in this class and that class. Like, I actually got to experience people for what it is, you know. The reason I enjoy, like, this podcast, the whole name about it, is because that's my whole goal in life. Like, I tell people all the time, you can't possess people, you know.
That's right.
Something that, like, I really truly believe, like,
sure.
You got to experience them. And what that means is you got to take them for what they are and just experience and appreciate the experience you have with that individual.
Absolutely. So when did you notice or realize that maybe there was a difference between you and other people? And I don't only mean, you know, maybe race. I also just mean, you know, maybe the way you were brought up in your diversity in thought, in, you know, financial situations and all these other things. And, you know, was it when you went to, you know, Malibu, or you changed schools, or was it when you played for the Vikings? When did it really click, like, wait a minute, we think a lot differently than maybe some of my other friends from my old neighborhood?
Yeah, no, it actually was at a very early age. You know, my grandma, my mom, and my dad, and my godfather, they used to always tell me, like, man, there's something about you, like, you special, man. Like, and I really didn't understand that as a child. But, like, it's funny because, like, I can remember, like, my godfather tells me this all the time, every time we talk. Like, we don't talk a lot as much as we did when I was younger, but we talk in periods of time. And whenever we talk, the first thing he tell me, he's like, man, I knew you was gonna be successful. And I'm like, I ain't even did nothing yet, you know? And he like, man, but you gotta understand, like, the day that I sent you in that store to get some Gatorade, you didn't have no money in your hand, and you came out with two Gatorades because two people decided to buy you some Gatorade.
I love it.
He was like, that's when I knew you were gonna be somebody.
Yeah.
And I was like, at an early age, you know what I mean? I didn't really understand that. But as I started to grow older and understand, like, I don't know, my train of thought was just different because I knew I deserved better.
Right.
I don't know what it was about it. Like, I don't know. Well, actually, yeah, I do. Like, my mom, like, you know, my mom always wanted the finer things in life. My mom is a very, like, she goes out and gets what she wants.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so for me, like, that was something, like, I'm not a very materialistic dude, you know, but I do believe, like, you deserve the better things in life, but you also got to understand you got to work for it.
Yeah, work for it, and then, you know, whatever you work for, you can get.
Yeah, you know, my grandma, the reason I'm grateful for my grandma, Mr. Vernon, you know, my grandma Deborah, is because, you know, my grandma, like, she made me work early.
Right.
I mean, I remember when I was 10 years old, you know, I had my own little car wash, little thing popping off in our complex in the Gloria Homes, you know?
Yeah.
That's in the jungles, you know what I'm saying? In the Gloria Homes, like, I remember being a kid, like, and taking people's trash out just for money, like, not even asking for money, just because, like, you know, that's just the kind of kid I was. I like to help people, bro, like, and that's why I feel like I'm grateful for my environment, because so much of the diversity in the environment, as far as the adversity growing up and just the good times, seeing what it's like to live good, like, you got to understand, Beverly Hills is right here. Crenshaw's down here.
Right.
East LA over there. Like, that ain't too far, you know? Everything is right there, like, and if you really from the areas, like, you really know, like, it ain't nothing but a hop, skip, and a jump to get to Hollywood. And it ain't nothing but a hop, skip, and a jump to see some houses down the street that's better than yours, you know?
Right.
And so I say that to say, like, even though you come from that environment, like, you're driven to want better because, you know, you put in an environment that tell you deserve otherwise. And so it's either you're going to be a victim of the circumstance, you know what I'm saying, or you're going to look and think outside the box. And that's why I tell you I'm grateful for my grandma, because, like, she used to always tell me, man, you got to think past Wilshire. And as a kid, I didn't understand that.
But right.
Because I had the experiences that I had playing at Santa Monica and then going and playing at St. Andrew's Park with all my homies, you know, that I grew up with in my neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? And then going from there to playing, you know, high school ball at Westchester with all my homies from my neighborhood, you know, to getting into stuff every day after school, getting in trouble after school, to getting sent out to Palisades and having to wake up early every day to catch either the public bus or, you know, the school bus just to get out to Malibu to make sure I made it to class on time so I could play football that semester and things like that. Like, it was just a different experience. Like, it was a whole paradigm shift. You know what I'm saying? Like, and like being in Santa Monica, and like, I guess to answer your question is, at an early age, I could tell that I was different, or at least I thought differently.
Sure.
Than most of my peers, at least. But, like, I didn't never really want to acknowledge it.
Sure. You know?
I'm actually just now, like, as a grown man, I'm about to be 28 on the 17th.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just now, like, realizing and understanding, like, what my influence is and how I'm influencing people and what, you know, what I got to be paying attention to and what I'm doing and what I, you know, because, I mean, I'm still growing, you know?
Right.
I'm not perfect, bro. Like, a lot of people look up to me, and I appreciate that so much, but a lot of the people that look up to me don't know, like, they help motivate me be better every day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Now I want to go down the road of also talking about people from your neighborhood and so on. Tell me a little bit about, you know, things like the gang life and the violence and how people get in. Because I also think people don't understand how that all works. And I talk about that from a firsthand. You know, I was jumped into a gang when I was in, gosh, was it 7th or 8th grade? And the gang was called Crew. And we loved the movie Juice and everybody, you know. So I walk into a bathroom and I'm with all the kids from my neighborhood. And I get jumped in, right?
Yeah.
And then we walk around all the time. And these are, you know, a bunch of, I mean, we've got, you know, white kids, we got Hispanic kids, we got Asian kids, Polynesian kids, black kids, all these as a part of our gang. And that's the gang that ran the school, right? And so on. But it's funny because I look back at it and I think, yeah, were there some troublemakers? Were there some people doing illegal things? Yeah. Did some kids bring guns to school? Yeah. I mean, that's how we lived. But at the end of the day, we weren't kids that were going out there with we weren't bad kids, right? We weren't kids that said, okay, I wake up every day and I'm going to go out and I'm going to do something bad, right? It's we're a bunch of kids that, number one, are loyal to our neighborhood and our friendships.
Yeah.
We look after one another. We love one another.
Yeah.
And so that's what we end up doing, is taking care and trying to watch out for one another.
Yeah.
And that naturally becomes a gang. And I look at Polynesians too. It's the same way.
Yeah.
A lot of the Polynesian gangs are just formulations of family and friends who get together to look after one another. Uh-huh. And that's what it is. It's not this group of people that wake up and say, okay, it's 9 a.m. I'm going to go rob something, or, you know, rob a store or shoot something. I'm going to go out and I'm going to make sure that people just, you know, feel terrible.
Nah.
People don't understand that. So I want you to be able to give a little bit of light into really, you know, how that all goes on and shed some light on that for people that might not have an exposure to
that. So first off, like, if people don't really understand the gang life, I advise you to go watch a movie called Bastards of the Party.
Good.
The reason I advise you to go watch that movie is because it explains, like, the history of gangbanging and where it came from and why it is what it is today. Gangbanging originally started out as just dudes, like, looking out for one another, because during the early, like, I think it was, like, 60s or maybe even the early 50s, back when they was, like, integrating and stuff.
Right.
And all the black people was coming from the East Coast, migrating to the West, you know, when they was settling in California or whatever. Like, you know, schools, like, areas like the Crenshaw District and Watts and things like that was all white, you know what I mean? And so, like, for my grandfather, like, him, like, he grew up trying to protect himself from being jumped by white dudes on his way from school. Like, that's really how it all transpired. Right. And so if you really want to know and really want to understand the narrative and really just want to understand it, from an understanding point of view,
yeah,
I really advise you to go check out the movie called Bastards at a Party. It's a real good documentary, and it explained like a lot of the reason why, like, you know, gangs are what they are today. You know what I'm saying? I'm not sitting up here saying I advise gang violence, but what I will tell you is, like, that's a part of my culture. Like, in all reality, that's one of the only things that I ever really get to hold on to. That's what I know I'm from. You know, I don't really know a lot of my history from my family.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's majority of the black people that's in LA. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of our dads or, you know, relatives have been involved in the gang violence or caught up in the system, however you want to view it, whatever you want to, however you want to go that route. But as far as, like, the way people are, like, people got to understand, man, like, I'm not giving nobody no excuse. Because, like I said, I'm not a victim of my circumstance, but, like, people don't have ways to eat.
Right.
And people got to figure out how to eat.
Right.
And it's like, in that lifestyle, one of my idols, you know what I'm saying, Nipsey Hussle, rest in peace, like, he said it best, you know what I'm saying? Like, in that environment, you got a savage mentality where it's like, you got to get it by any means, you got to eat, no matter what. And that's really the environment in there. It's like dog-eat-dog world.
Right.
Because you got to, like, survive. If you don't eat, then... The next man eating and, you know what I'm saying? Like, you starving. And so it's like a lot of people don't understand that narrative here in Utah. The reason I say that is just because this environment is a great environment, bro.
Sure.
I mean, I've been to the ghettos out here. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it ain't no ghettos here. But, like, to me, like, I done been to the ghettos here, you know. And I would have loved to grow up in any environment in Utah as a kid, you know what I'm saying? Because my experience coming from South Central LA, hearing gunshots, being chased by the police, being chased by dudes, you know, people just being involved in that environment, going from that environment, starving, you know what I'm saying? Trying to figure out how I'm gonna eat every night, you know what I'm saying? Hustling, making sure I got money to make sure I got gas so I can get to school, whether it be if I'm hopping on the bus, risking my life, going through five territories, you know what I'm saying? Like, it went from me doing that to coming and being in Utah. I didn't even know what a Utah was. You know what I'm saying? I didn't even know that there was anything of the sorts. And so when I came out here, you know, it took a while for me to get used to because it was quiet. It was peaceful. Yeah. There ain't no, you know, there's violence, bro. Don't get me wrong. But, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, like, compared to where I'm from, you got the extreme.
Yeah.
You know? And then, and it's only because of the narrative of where I am, where I come from.
Yeah.
But then here, it's like, You go down a couple notches. It's not easy here, but it ain't the extreme.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And so
I served my mission in Riverside, California, and in the IE, just living there for 2 years. Man, it's funny that you talk about being quiet and just peaceful, because every night in certain areas I'd live in Riverside, whether it be the Corona area or Moreno Valley, some of these pockets, you would always hear the ghetto bird. It would always be helicopters all the time.
Yeah.
You'd always hear sirens going on all the time, depending on what area you were on. And I guess it's funny that you said that, because I didn't realize it till I was in California. And I'm thinking, man, it is so noisy here.
That's the truth. Like,
versus crazy. Back in Utah, I was thinking, I guess you just take that for granted, right?
You know, it's funny, man. Like, you know, I came out here to Utah, and not only did the environment, like, kind of trip me out, but, like, I got to see, like, what families were.
Right.
And I'm not saying, like, my family ain't a real family. I'm just saying, like, you know, I come from a dysfunctional background, man. I'm
gonna
just keep it real, you know? Like, we don't know a lot of history about where we come from. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm growing and getting older. And as I'm getting older, I'm wanting to invest in that more and learning that more, because the more I'm learning about that, the more I'm understanding who I am and why I do a lot of the things that I do. A lot of the people that come from my environment, at least, they don't, like, really come from the greatest upbringing, I should say, because it's a whole bunch, like, and I'm not going to say everybody in the Crenshaw District got a horrible upbringing, because they don't.
Right.
That's just not how it is. Like, there's very nice areas in the Crenshaw District.
Right.
There's very nice areas all over California and LA, and in South Central, you know, and in Compton and anywhere else that you think there's a ghetto, you know.
Right.
The perception that people get on TV is not real.
Right.
You know, if you take a moment just to understand people and listen to what they got to say, you would understand that.
Like,
and that's one thing I learned coming to Utah, is what I'm trying to say. Like, because it's funny, man, like, Mormons used to come through the hood all the time, and I never knew what they was, you know. The homies used to offer them beers and stuff. I don't drink,
but
like, the homies used to offer them, like, beers and stuff whenever we seen them come through the neighborhood. Like, we had fish fries and stuff. Like, we'd offer them food because, you know, we look at it this way. Like, anybody trying to shed some positivity on the environment that we come from,
right,
man, more power to you.
Yep.
That's why, like, the whole, you know, Nipsey Hussle thing is, like, heartbreaking, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I've been really rocking with bro since the day he decided to, you know, put himself out there. I feel like, you know, I seen him and his brothers, you know, on the corner of Crenshaw and Slauson. Yeah. I seen them driving through the neighborhood, you know.
I think you said them. That once to me. You said hustling out of the back of their Astro van with selling T-shirts and CDs. And
I swear to God, bro. And it's crazy because, like, that's the reason, like, I always was, like, so hard at, like, that's why I rock with him so tough. I'm not really going to speak on the subject of how he passed because I don't really want to get into that because, like, that ain't my place. But, like, as far as, like, the impact it had, man, I ain't never felt my environment, like, feel that way ever when I went back, you know? And I say that to say, like, you know, here's this dude who is set, he set out to do exactly what I was planning on doing, but he did it, you know what I'm saying? And the way he did it, like, he laid the blueprint out. He did it so prestigiously and prolifically, you know, that I feel like people felt him as a threat. And when you're doing something right, you know what I'm saying? Like,
jealousy and envy.
Right, bro. And that's just where I'm going to leave that.
Yeah.
Like, the reason I bring him up is just because, like, he's one of the people that's also influenced me, like, outside as far as music go, like, outside of Tupac. And that's the reason I bring that up is because he's very influential to my environment.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Neighborhood Nip. I want to talk about Nipsey. So here's somebody who is a very similar story from you when it comes to leaving his house at 14 years old, right?
Yeah.
Left and went to live with, I believe it was his grandmother?
Grandmother,
yeah.
Grandma, yeah.
Went out. And then there's a time when, and I've watched a lot of video on him, a lot of interviews, because I think he's such an inspirational individual.
Yeah.
But he talks about how when he joined the Rolling 60s, he went and did his thing, and he said, and then there was a time, I think he went with his father to Africa. He and his brother went to Africa, and he came back, and he just had a totally different mentality when he was around 19.
Yeah.
And he said he just knew he had to work, and he knew he wanted to spread positivity. Mm-hmm. He knew he wanted to lift those around him, and that's where, you know, Nipsey Hussle came from.
It's funny, yeah, because that's, like, really what it is. Like I said earlier, you know, my dad, he from West Boulevard, Crip, 28th Street. We vibe with the 60s, so, and I grew up in the 60s, so, you know, I bang twos to the sixes, or used to. And so it's funny because, like, for me, when I got out of that environment and I came to Utah, I didn't really understand, like, why people were so nice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that helped me grow as an individual. You know what I'm saying? One of the people I really want to give a shout out to is my lady. Her name Troop. And then also, you know, John Madison, because both of these individuals, since I've been out here in Utah, have helped me grow. Like, really grow. Like, and when I mean grow, I mean, like, really step back and take a different perspective on this life, this thing we call life. You know what I'm saying? Like, your
human experience.
Yeah, bro, that's exactly what it is.
The human experience.
Exactly, the human experience. Like, you know, this thing we call life is not something to play with. It's not a game, you know what I mean? Because you only get one shot.
Right.
And I feel like every day I'm alive just because of the environment I come from. I mean, I'm still losing homies to this day. They dropping like flies, you know? God forbid, like, I hear anything else about that, but, like, that's just the environment, you know? And I say that to say, like, it could have been me. It could have been any of us. I ain't wanting them to be shoulda, coulda, woulda, but I just know what the situation is. And so I'm saying, like, I got a lot of gratitude in my life because of the environment I come from.
I love that.
And the environment I was put in, you know, here in Utah. I learned a lot of valuable lessons at the University of Utah. I came here looking for guidance.
Yep.
So I could change the narrative from the South Central state of mind to actually understanding what it meant to be a man.
Right. And I think that's a lot of what Nipsey talks about, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why it resonates a ton. And I look at a person like Nipsey Hussle, and it's funny, when I look across America and the way that he's received, there's so many people showing so much love, right? But on the other side, there's also people that are uninformed that think, well, there's just another gang member that got shot.
Right.
And they don't really understand him for who he was and what he was trying to do, especially in his communities. And I think that's where the beauty really lies, is what he was trying to do in the community, right? And giving back. And there's a story that we actually talked about. You know, I was just in South Central, and I showed you all these pictures, because, as you said, a lot of people are like, well, gosh, I can't believe that you're rolling through, you know, the Crenshaw District and down this area. You know, number one, I was in a Volkswagen Turbo convertible, which was...
Right. And nobody bothers you, right?
Yeah, when I'm wearing a pink Aloha shirt and I'm
nobody
rolling through.
Gonna bother you,
and
bro.
I just said, you know, these are my humans. These are my people,
that's
right?
Exactly. Bro,
so you come through there. So I come through and I go down, and I wanted to go to the Marathon store. I wanted to buy shirts, a couple T-shirts and some hats and some stuff just to support the whole deal and just show love and respect. You know what I mean?
I appreciate that.
And it was cool because I was down there talking. to some of the 60s that were sitting there, and they're giving tours of the area and mm-hmm. so on, and taking people on tours. And, you know, I was asking, you know, gosh, I wish I could come get a shirt. And they said, oh, no, we got so much online business. We had to close or just
shut the store down
oh, wow. and then continue, yeah. you know, fulfill all the orders from online. Yeah. And then we'll, you know, make it roll again. But it's funny because I got to walk around all the streets and,
yeah.
and through that area. And there's a story that it was really funny. I was chopping it up with those guys, and they were so funny and so loving and embracing. They're probably just thinking, this Polynesian guy with the pink shirt.
Bro, look, man, I want people to know out there, like, you know, people in the Crenshaw district is just like anybody else.
Oh, so much love, man. So much love.
You know, it's crazy because, like, we don't get to see a lot, you know? We don't get to see a lot. People would think, like, you know, y'all right there, so y'all get to see everything. But it's like, people be thinking that people want to rob you and jack you for everything you got, when in all reality, like, people just grateful to see and know different, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm grateful for my environment. I got homies that's Hispanic, you know what I mean? I got homies that's Black. I got homies that's white. I got homies, you know, that's from all different types, Polynesian, like, yeah. and I'm just grateful. The reason I say that is just because I've got to enjoy and endure different experiences with yeah. each and every one of these individuals, and I would never, like, change them for that experience,
yeah.
because it's like, that's what we all bring to the table.
That's what we all bring to the table. You know? And that's what, but I also love the fact that we can look at something and say, I'm going to lift myself up and take myself out of my current situation, no matter what it is. And that's just not sitting, you know, from Nipsey Hussle in the Crenshaw district.
Right.
That's Carlos Okia sitting here in Sandy, Utah.
Anywhere.
Right. And I look at him, and there's the one story that just was so impactful to me, and that he had shared. And I went by that restaurant, and there's the restaurant in the complex
mm-hmm.
where he told the story of, we used to go and frequent this restaurant. The owner ended up ripping out all the tables and all mm-hmm. the chairs and throwing them out because he didn't want
us. Astro Burger.
Yeah, Astro Burger.
Right next door.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I went over there, and he said, you know, and Nipsey had said, well, you know, he took all that because he didn't want us hanging around there.
Yeah.
Right? And then he says, and then I went and bought the building.
Yeah.
That's, and now he's paying me rent.
Right.
Instead of just complaining about it, he says, I'm going to be about it.
Right.
And that's
right.
And that's what he did. And so his legacy is so, it's impactful. Mm-hmm. because he wasn't only talking about doing it.
Example.
He did it.
Yeah, man.
And he was inspiring others, and he was just moving. And he wasn't doing it in downtown Beverly Hills.
Nah,
he wasn't doing it in Houston or Dallas or, you know, Chicago. He was doing it right in his own neighborhood.
Man, I'm grateful I got the opportunity to, like, just be able to see him do that. There was times when me and the homies would be driving through the neighborhood, and we see him, he chuck the ends up at us, and we'd be like, oh, that's Nipsey. You know, I ain't never been the type to, you know, run over to no celebrity or anybody. Be like, oh, like, I ain't never, that's just not me, you know,
because
I understand that they human, you know, I get that. But, like, as far as, like, just being able to sit back and watch from the, you know, sidelines and see him grow into who he was, it was like, you know, damn, like, I can be somebody too. You know what I'm saying? I come from this. And I can still be somebody. Like, just because I come from this don't mean this got to be my circumstance.
Right.
Just because my mom and my dad was hustlers don't mean I got to be stuck in that environment.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to go to college. I want to go be educated. Like, one of my main reasons for playing football, it's funny because, like, after I got away from that, I was so caught up with not going to the NFL and making it and doing it the way I want to.
Right.
Like, for a year, I was, like, stuck, you know? Didn't really know what to do because I thought all I was a football player. But, like, as I got older and wiser, I realized, like, man, you know, I achieved a lot of my dreams, man, that I didn't appreciate at the time because I was trying to pursue someone else's dream.
Right.
I never wanted to go to the NFL, bro. Like, I always wanted to play Division I football.
Yeah.
And I did that. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate that because I did that from nothing, man. Like,
right.
I really did that by myself, on my own. Like, no, I take that back. I did that with the help of Gregory Norwood Sr. and Miss Eleanor Norwood Sr. You know, my brother's Jeffrey, he played for Utah too.
Yeah.
They mom helped me transition, make that transition out here. I got to give her the credit for that because she helped me as a man, like, you know, make that transition from LA to that environment.
Yeah, and tell me a little bit about that. So let's go into, well, you're sitting in California and all of a sudden, hey, we want you to come to Utah.
Yeah.
Tell me what was your first thought, and then tell me about coming to Utah and how that whole experience worked.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep it real with you. Like, before I came out here, like, I was playing football at West LA Junior College. I was also running track there, and we had just won the Western State Conference Championship in the track, you know, in track and field. And so I was getting all kind of, like, opportunities to go run track, but because our JUCO wasn't a big JUCO, like, we wasn't really getting offers. Like, we was getting offers from schools, but, like, schools was, like, Utah State or, like, Texas State or, you know, small schools like that. If it was to, like, a USC or UCLA, like, we had to walk on and try out and stuff like that.
Right.
And so I was at this point, like, I was just on my own. You know, I was living out of my Lexus. I was living on Fifth Avenue, Florence. Like, but majority of the time, I was living out of my Lexus because, like, I was hustling, man. I was, like, trying to get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, at the same time, like, I'm taking 19 units every semester at West LA, like, playing sports. And one of my childhood friends, my best friend, his brother, Gregory Norwood Jr., you know, we came across paths again. And we started being connected or whatever. And so for about a whole entire year, like, we was just connected through, you feel me, our last first year JUCO and then our second year JUCO. Like, we was just hip to hip. And so one thing led to another. They asked me to come out here and take a trip with them just to drive out here. And I came out here, and Coach Chad Kahalaha
was Chad.
At Utah State when he was recruiting me.
Ah, got it.
But he had came to Utah. And it's funny because I, like, was switching phones. You know what I'm saying? Like, at the time, I had a whole bunch of different phones because, you know, I was trying to get it, man. And I was, like, missing out calls and stuff, missing out scouts and missing out on opportunities because I wanted to run the streets, you know what I'm saying, and try to figure out how to eat or whatever. And when we came out here, Coach Chad was like, hey, man, I'm recruiting you. Like, I've been recruiting you since you was at Utah State. You go to West LA, right? And I was like, yeah. He was like, I've been recruiting you when I was at Utah State. You know, I want you to come out here and see what it's about. If you like it, we'll bring you on.
Right.
So, you know, me and Jeffrey came out here. We did our financial aid stuff, got all that stuff situated, came out here, walked on, did our thing, and that was that.
And the rest is history. Right. So tell me what it was like coming into Utah and looking around. How did it feel?
Bro, first off, it was a scary experience. You know, the reason I say scary is because I ain't never been that far away from home by myself.
Right.
Like, I was really by myself.
Right.
In unknown territory, you know, like, don't get me wrong. Jeffrey had his mom and them. So, you know, they helped him transition to get in college and set up and stuff like that. But, like, my mom and them didn't know nothing about none of that, man. Like,
right.
I wasn't a kid who got football camps and all that. I just played football. That was what it was. Like,
right.
You feel me? Like, if I wanted to play, I had to figure it out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't none of that other stuff. Yep. And so for me, like, when I got here, it was like, bro, you got to figure it out. It was basically like I was just dropped off, like, boom.
Wow.
And so I got here. All I knew is I was going to hustle hard and I was going to get a spot on this roster and I was going to play and I didn't care what nobody said.
Right.
And, you know, that's what I did. And it was funny because the first year I came here, I ended up being academically ineligible, not because of my grades, because I graduated from West LA with a 3.7 GPA.
Yeah.
But it was because a math class that they told me to take, I took and it didn't transfer.
Oh, geez.
So when it became time for me to play, I had to take a math class in a 6-week span,
ooh,
which I did it.
Yeah.
Finished the math class, but because my teacher that was online didn't post a grade before our first game, I couldn't play that season.
Oh, man.
And so, like, my first season, I had to sit out and be a manager, you know, a team manager. I had to just be on a team.
Yeah.
And that really humbled the hell out of me, bro.
I bet it did.
Because, like, no disrespect to my peers, but, like, you know, I'm a competitor, man, and I know I can play ball. I knew that.
Right.
You know, that's just what you know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? As a competitor. And so, for me, it was like, you know, I came out here to play football, and now I got to be a team manager, bro. Like,
right.
Man, I don't want to be here.
This isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah, you know, I almost came back home so many different times, and, like, had it not been for, like, the type of things I went through growing up as a kid, you understand what I'm saying? Like, I don't feel like I would have been able to handle that adversity.
Sure.
Now, it's funny because, like, I used to look back when I graduated, I used to despise my school because I used to look back and be like, man, y'all didn't help me, like, the way I thought y'all was going to help me. Like,
right.
I did what I was supposed to in school, but, like, I understood, like, man, that ain't their job. They job ain't to, you know, be my daddy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They job ain't to guide me, like, I had to learn that as a man. And so I'm, like, very grateful for a lot of the experiences that I had up there, the nights that I was starving and the days we was eating all the snacks in the facilities because we didn't have no food. We used to take the snacks home because, like, we had to figure out how to eat, working at 5-6 different jobs. I was a preschool teacher at one point in time. You know, I was I used to wash cars, service cars. Like, I did a lot of different stuff throughout college because, like, I had the hustler's mentality. I just knew I deserved better and I knew I needed to succeed in life. You know, I was the first to be in my family to, like, leave.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. So tell me about culturally. So you come to Utah, looks a lot different. I mean, just walking around, going through the stores, the people, even on the college campus. Tell me about that experience.
The experience was a cool experience. Like, at first it was kind of weird because I used to always get people asking me, like, how'd you get here?
Right.
And I used to, that didn't resonate with me
because, like,
I was like,
the bus.
Bro, really?
I took my
like,
car.
Man, I flew a plane, or, you know, I tell him, like, bro, I hopped on a plane. You know, what the heck? Like, what do you mean?
Literally.
Like, what are you talking about? You know, but, like, as I got older, I really realized that because, like, in Utah, like, there's not very many African Americans. Like,
right.
There's not a lot as, like, it is in LA.
Right.
Or, you know, a New York or Texas. Sure.
Just, you not as diverse.
Mean? Yeah. You get what I'm saying? Especially when I first got here.
Yeah.
And so when I first got here, like, people were always so interested, but I used to take offense to it because I used to be like, man, I'm a human being. Like, right. What do you mean? Like,
right.
I'm just like you.
Yeah.
You know? But like, as I got older, I start to understand the narrative. Like, because there's a lot of refugees that come to Utah.
Right.
People don't really get to see, you know, black people outside of Africans unless, you know, they're interracial kids, which,
absolutely,
you know, is awesome, by the way. I don't want no one, yeah, to think that I feel any type of way about that, because I don't think that's a beautiful thing.
Sure.
But what I'm saying is, it's like, just being a black man from South Central LA and, yeah, coming to Utah, like, yeah, for whatever reason, people just knew I wasn't from Utah.
Sure.
Like, they just knew it. Like,
right,
they come up to me, they ask me, you know, where I was from. And, you know, as I got older, I started to want to understand, like, why people felt that way.
Yeah.
And so as I became a lot older and wanted to be a lot more open-minded and started to learn how to change my perspective on what it meant to be a man in life, I started to really understand why people wanted to be curious and why they, yeah, wanted to understand and why. Because you got people who come from Africa who really literally come from Africa with nothing and come out here and make something out of nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, you got people that come from Hawaii. You got people that come from Tonga. You got people that come from Samoa. I done met all types of people,
right,
here in Utah.
Yeah.
You know? And it's funny because, like, especially over the last, like, 9 years.
Yep.
Like, when I first got here, the University of Utah banners were just, you know, as far as academically, was all, you know, white people.
Right.
Like, as the years transpired, like, it's changed. It went from black people just being on sports to them having all kind of posters of gay people, of,
yeah,
you know, black people, Asian people, white people. Like, it's diverse.
Yep.
And, like, that for me means a lot to me because I was one of the first people to, or I feel like I was one of the first individuals to really experience that,
yep,
and see, like, wow, like, look, this is the cultural change. Like, this is the difference. Like, this is what it means to have people come from all over and really, like, add to the environment.
Yeah. You know, and I love that you narrated it like that too, around from the, you know, the last 9 years alone. I think, again, I go back to my father and I think of, gosh, this is a man that, number one, came over from a tiny island in Fiji, came to Hawaii, right? And, or I guess came to Tonga, went, you know, school and through the islands, but then came over from Hawaii to Utah in the early 1980s. And I can just imagine what was going through his mind.
Right.
Much like you.
Right.
I'm sure it's, and even then, a lot even more or less diverse,
yeah,
you know, and right. Such right. a different place in a Mormon community and right. just be like, what in the world is going on here?
Right.
And then now to look at that from the early 1980s to today,
yeah,
how much this state has changed dramatically.
Right. It's right.
such a tremendous, and just, it's funny to hear the last 10 years how much, because right. you're exactly right. right. I've even noticed over the last right. 10, 15, 20 years.
It's crazy, man. Like, it's a beautiful thing though. The reason I say that is because Utah is a place of opportunity, man.
Right. I agree.
I mean, a lot of people like to give Utah a lot of, you know, rag about being boring and slow. But, like, me as a man, like, I think this is one of the best places to raise a family, bro.
Yeah, man.
Like, you know.
Donovan Mitchell said this the other day. I don't know if you heard, yeah. but he was talking about the nightlife. He said, everybody gives Utah a guff for the nightlife. And he says, I love Utah.
Yeah.
Like, I love this place.
Yeah.
And he said, y'all are wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, I was like, good for you, Donovan.
Right. It's crazy because, like, you know, I'm from LA, so everybody can't stand the fact that I'm a Laker fan. And,
Lakers, know, right here, boy.
Yeah.
Magic Johnson ball right there. There
yeah,
we go.
Yeah. You know, people can't stand that. But, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, I'm a Utah U.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I love this state because when I came here, it embraced me. It
yeah.
embraced everything about who I was. I didn't get treated like I wasn't supposed to be here.
Right.
I didn't get that of any sorts. You
I
know
love
what I'm
that.
Saying? Like, you know, yeah, you know, you deal with your everyday issues, you know what I'm saying, from people, because that's just how people are. Yeah,
people,
you know,
are people are people.
Right. And so you got good and bad people everywhere.
Right.
But one thing I can tell you is, like, one thing Utah has taught me, man, is just to be grateful for the little things, like the air we breathe, bro.
Right.
And the seasons. Like,
yep.
you know, they get all four seasons here.
Yeah,
like,
right.
We literally get all four seasons here. Sometimes some might be a little dragged out.
Yeah.
Like this,
this
winter
last
was.
Winter, jeez.
Yeah, you know?
Yep, that's
but
right.
But, like, majority of the time, man, like, we get really nice weather, like,
right.
you know, and I feel like we as humans are ones that are supposed to be in tune with the earth. We're so caught up in the man-made environment as far
so
as, like,
much.
This materialistic stuff, the buildings and stuff that we got, you know,
yeah.
the lifestyles, the careers and all that, that we sometimes tend to forget, like, you know, God, regardless of who you believe in, put this.
Yep.
And when I say this, I mean the skies, the stars, you know, the mountains. I'm talking about the trees and the different living animals and the different everything, like everything that's put on this earth out that's not man-made.
Yeah.
Life, yeah. Yo, is a blessing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
keep saying that because we need more people coming from South Central to Salt Lake.
Yeah. Yeah,
we need more people. Yeah, we need more diversity and more change in thought and more people to really embrace the beauty that is Salt Lake City.
It's Salt Lake is a beautiful place, you know. I got a lot of respect for the people of Salt Lake. The Mormon Church, I got a lot of respect for them. You know, I'm not very religious, but I got a lot of respect for a lot of people that I know and have befriended that are in the Mormon Church. You know, I got a lot of respect for anybody for, you know, in any, you know, field, background, whatever. Whether you know, gay, straight, whatever, you know, I got a lot of respect for people, period. Yeah. I respect people, you know, and that's what I'm about, bro. Like, and that's one thing I've come to understand about myself. Like, I don't care what you got, where you come from, what you about, man. As long as you about trying to be better, I'm willing to help you. Cause I know what it's like to sleep on the bench. You know what I'm saying? I know what it's like to not have. I know what it's like to not know. You know, yeah. I know what it's like not to be sure because that's the human experience, bro.
Yeah, it is the human experience.
So it's like when people understand like genuineness is also a part of the human experience.
Right.
You know, maybe we will all be able to take a second to be able to take a step back and just really appreciate life. Because at the end of the day, that's what I think it come down to. Because you can't take none of this stuff with you, right?
Right.
Like no matter how big, tall, big, small, whatever, you can't take none of this stuff with you.
Right.
And so the only thing you can leave behind is your remnants. And what I mean by that is like what kind of impact you had on people.
Right.
You know, I believe, like I told you, you can't possess people, but you can experience them.
I love that.
And so, you know, for me, the reason I love my job and what I do at my gym, you know, is because I'm able to, here I am, this black kid from South Central LA, whatever narrative you want to look at it from, you know, I'm this black kid that was a hustler, thug, whatever, however you want to think of me. Now I'm educated with 3 degrees. I done been a car salesman. I was one of the top salesmen in Utah and at Murdoch Hyundai. You know, I was also a broker at one point, you know, at Optum Bank. So, you know, I ain't no fool. You know, I'm very well educated. I'm very intellectual.
Yep.
So I say that to say, like, I done own my own businesses here and there. You know, I got a little bit of something invested in this gym that I got going on. You know, with John Masson, who is also a phenomenal man, by the way. And like me as a man, like I've come to understand and learn that there's levels to it.
Right.
And it's all about your perspective. And the reason I love what I do in this gym is because no matter what time of day, no matter how it's feeling, I got people that understand that, hey, you know, they come to me thinking they can't do half the stuff they end up doing.
Yep.
You know, I'm talking about regular moms, grandfathers, you know, athletes, all kind of people. You know, I just get the experience to experience people. And that's what I enjoy about it. Not only do I get to experience them, but I get to also watch them experience their own greatness without even knowing like they great, you know,
because
it's like, look, man, like everybody has some type of greatness in them. You just got to be willing to work hard to dig deep and find it.
I love that. Now, you know, you just gave me the chills, bro. And a lot of it is because what we're going to call this episode, the marathon continues.
Yeah.
Right. And what you just described, it is a marathon. And I'm a 280-pound Polynesian. I ain't running no marathons. But that's a goal of mine. I want to run them. And you know why I want to run it? Because not because I want to really run it or win an award or whatever. Because I want to suffer through it. I want to feel what it feels like. Because I can imagine running through a marathon. It's not easy. Even all these people that run marathons all the time.
Yeah.
Like my neighbor, who I love and adore, she runs the Boston Marathon so on. But I listen to it and I just think, you know, you've got to go through psychologically so much during a marathon, right? You're going, you're running, and then you get a little bit of an injury, and then your mind wanders, and then all of a sudden, man, you're tough and you're thirsty, and then you want to quit, and then you push yourself to keep going. Mm-hmm. And mentally, you probably want to quit 20, 30, 40, 50 times, but you have to keep motivating and hustling and inspiring and just pushing yourself till you get across that finish line.
Right, exactly.
And I can think that's why I want to run it, because I want to go through all the emotions.
Yeah.
I want to go through the challenge. I want to push myself and fight. I want to fight through the challenge, even if it takes me 10 days to get there. I want to go through it. And so when you talk about this, it has been a marathon. And the marathon only continues, right?
Right.
And that's really what that whole piece means.
Right.
Is we're going through this whole thing called life, this human experience, but it's a marathon.
Right.
You know,
you got to keep on chugging, man.
You got to keep on chugging.
And that's the thing, like, what people got to understand is it's like, man, you know, you ain't never going to be perfect. Nobody is perfect out here. But the only way you get progression is by being uncomfortable.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You got to push. That's what muscle, that's what the gym is about. You know, you come to the gym, you're breaking your muscles down, you're breaking yourself down, you're pushing yourself to the limit, you're doing things like, man, you don't believe you can do even when you don't want to do it. And it's like, when you push past that limit, you're like, man, you know, I can do this. And so when adversity is thrown your way, you're like, man, psh, this ain't nothing I ain't never handled before.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? And so, exactly, man. Like, I tell people all the time, you know, the reason I say athletic and fit is where great people do great things is because, you know, a lot of people come there and achieve their greatness.
Yep.
What I mean by that is not something that they doing physically in the gym.
Right.
It's all a mental thing, bro.
Right.
It's mental, you know. Right. It's a mental thing. It's just understanding and knowing that you are better and you can be great. And no matter where you come from, I don't care if you're some rich kid in the suburbs or some poor kid in the ghetto or live in the middle of anywhere. I don't care where you're from. You can be whatever you want to be in life.
Yep.
If you're willing to put the work in to get it, you just got to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, and as we always say on this show, comfort is the enemy of progress, right? That's really what it boils down
to. Idle time is the devil's playground.
That's
man.
Exactly
That's what
right.
Nipsey said, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
it's
I
true.
Love that.
Like, it's exactly what you're saying. Like, bro, it's not, you got to know, you know, I'm learning, like, man, the energy. It's about your energy.
Yeah, that's right.
The energy you keep around you.
Yeah, people. What you're putting out, what you're bringing in, who you surround yourself with.
Right.
I agree with that 100%.
Genuineness, you know, if you're doing something, expecting something else in return,
yeah.
You're doing it for the wrong reason.
Doing it wrong.
But if you're doing something out of the genuineness of your heart
yeah.
and just out of the genuineness of who you are as a human being,
yeah,
bro, I believe everything else is a byproduct of that.
That's
just like you conquering your own thoughts in your mind. Because at the end of the day, I tell my clients this all the time, and they know this, you either your biggest ally or your worst enemy.
That's right. It all comes down to us, right?
Right.
Absolutely. I love that. So give some shout outs to your people. Anybody you're going to pass this along to? People from the old neighborhood, people from the new neighborhood, your lady.
Yeah.
You know, whoever you have out there, just give some shout outs. And then after you're done shouting out, I also want you to make sure you give a shout to your business. Tell people about how they can get a hold of you, what your business contains.
Yeah.
Let's make sure they know who you
appreciate
are.
Appreciate that. So, yeah, my name is Tango Towns. I want to shout out all my people from back home in the Crenshaw District. You know, Aaliyah, Nikki G, my auntie Chris, my mom, my dad, my grandma, my niece, my ladybug, Delilah. I also want to shout out my lady. You know, Troop Tran, the beautiful lady who's always held me down no matter what we go through. She always hold me down. You know, life ain't easy, but she always hold me down. You know, I also want to shout out John Madison for being a great influence in my life and the man that he is. Like, he's an awesome man. He's a great dude. Yeah, and anybody else I forgot to mention, y'all know who y'all are. Like, I love y'all. Like, everybody that I didn't mention, you know I love you. Shout out my little sister Deborah and my little sister Aaliyah too. Also want to shout out our business. It's called Athletic and Fit, and we're a private studio inside of XL Fitness, specialized in helping people transform their lives as far as their bodies physically and mentally. And so if you looking to get mentally strong and achieve your greatness and tap into what your greatness is, you could check us out at Athletic and Fit, Athletic AF on Facebook, and then it's at Athletic AF on Instagram.
Perfect.
And then if you want to check me out and just follow me, my Instagram is Tango_Towns. Yeah, man, I want to thank you for the opportunity, just bringing me on there and humbling me, man, and giving me the opportunity to just get some of my thoughts out, bro.
I really appreciate that.
Like, I appreciate that. And anybody listening out there, I hope that this helps inspire you to go achieve your greatness, no matter what that is, no matter what you believe that is, whether that's being the best janitor in the world, no matter what nobody say, go out there and do it.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't care what nobody tell you. Ain't nothing wrong with a real hustle. Ain't nothing wrong with getting out there and getting to it. So, yeah.
I love that. So, last question for you, Tango, before we let you go. BYU Utah, any predictions?
Man, you know who I'm going with. So I swear, ain't
and let me preface this. You know you're in Cougar Country right around this.
Oh yeah. So I gotta be careful. Okay.
I'm just playing. Ain't no joke.
No, but you know we. I think my class started the streak, right? Ain't we
like
8-0
that's right.
Or something
that's
like
right.
that?
That's right.
So you know we about to go on 9-0. That's how I look at it, bro. I don't care how close the game is. It's always a good game. That's all I'm saying.
I'd invite you over, but that day we might not talk.
Hey,
I'm just playing. I got nothing but love. I'll tell you, it's been an absolute blessing to have Tango here in my home, here in the studio. This is an individual that just spreads nothing but love. Aloha, positivity. When you meet Tango Towns, I please encourage you, make sure you follow up on and hit him up. Go use his resource. If you're looking for any kind of growth in your life, whether it be personally, spiritually, physically, mentally, this is the guy to connect with. He's the one that's going to take you there because he just has something. He is different. He is special. He's a very unique individual. And that's why I wanted to grab him and pull him into this podcast because I not only want to hear what he has to say, I know there's a lot of people out there that need to hear the words that are coming out of this man's mouth. Very bright young individual, and you have such a huge future ahead of you, my man. And
thank you.
I'm very proud of you, and I'm happy to be along this journey. And so, love you to death. Thanks for being here, brother.
I appreciate you. I do want to leave y'all with this note. You know, I was always told, if you want to see change in the world, it starts with you.
I love that.
And so, with that, I hope I inspire you guys to go out and inspire.
I love it. Well, this is another episode of the Human Experience Podcast. You know, thanks for checking in. Make sure and go on to your favorite podcasting area and leave us a review or a rating. We'd love to hear your feedback. And we look forward to having you back with us this next time here on the podcast. The marathon continues. All we're trying to do is get a little bit better every single day.
Yes, sir.
Love one another. Live this human experience. Make sure we're pulling everybody up. And with that, thank you again, my man Tango Towns.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you so much.
Tangeray, much love, brother. And to my friends, aloha.
Deuces.